Welcome to the STAR Coalition podcast. I'm Luke Kramer, Executive Director of the STAR Coalition. Thanks for joining us as we sit down with thought leaders from across research and advocacy who are working tirelessly to make a difference in the lives of those living with brain disorders, especially mental illness. And we are excited today to have with us Ms. Leslie Bagley. Leslie has had a mental illness since she was 14 years old. She kept her illness a secret, and as she said, she suffered in silence, except for letting some of her family know. Leslie said her childhood was wonderful, and she was well-loved. Her mother was always there for her, and I know her mother. She's a wonderful person. But her teenage years was a little different, a little more stressful because of the secret shame she felt of having a mental illness. Well, Leslie graduated high school and college with honors, although it was very difficult. And she had a psychotic episode that eventually put her into an organization called Birch Tree Communities, a mental health organization. She was in several different cities with this organization, but in one place called Bentontown, she said she really excelled. She felt that everyone at this organization helped her, and now she sees herself as a mental health advocate. She's got a part-time job working for Birch Tree and has a wonderful people around her, friends and family. She was also the head of the executive council. It's called Member Executive Councils for clients at this organization for 8 years, where she attended many seminars and meetings and classes for mental health. Leslie, I'm so glad that we were able to sit down today. I appreciate you joining me.
Well, hello, Luke. It's great to be able to do this. This is amazing.
I know that you said that you had prepared something, that you had written something that you wanted to kind of start out with. So I'm just going to go ahead and turn it over to you if you want to read to us.
Okay. Well, hello, everyone. So my name is Leslie Bagley, and I have a mental illness. I am currently attending a mental health facility called Stride House, and I am a staff for a wonderful place called Birch Tree Communities. In January, I will have 10 years as a mental health paraprofessional, MHPP, a program tech. I have been in Birch as a member for 12 years altogether. Birch Tree and Stride House are the mental health facilities in Arkansas that I am familiar with. They are both clubhouse entities, where a set group of people or members, as we call each other, hence family members, we have groups together, we eat with each other, everyone has a chore to do on a daily basis, we share our stories and our problems together. We really do become friends and each other's support systems. I have been in Stride House for almost 2 years now. Stride House is a more independent setting than Birch, but I truly needed and utilized Birch Tree Communities. I have been in and out of mental health facilities and hospitals for over 20 years. I kept most of my symptoms a secret because I was ashamed and embarrassed of my mental illness. When my mental health was the worst, life was extremely difficult for me. I needed almost constant care. I could not function. I had to have help with even basic things like writing a check, shopping, using a debit card, cooking, cleaning, using a computer, making phone calls. And I couldn't even focus enough to read, and I absolutely love to read. My mood swings were out of control. I saw and heard things that weren't real. I was not able to sleep, even on very high-powered medications. I contemplated suicide almost constantly. I actually made a suicide attempt when I was absolutely miserable. Birch didn't give up on me. They worked diligently with me to get me on the right meds. They put me on something called Member Executive Council, MEC, that gave me a voice. What you may not realize is that Birch Tree and Stride House helped the whole community. You see me now able to function, my mental illness controlled. I am very happy and I have a splendid life. But before Birch Tree, I was sick and I did things that no one could understand, even dangerous things to myself and others. I have a very amazing family and they love me very much, but even so, they could not help me. I needed more than their love. I needed professionals who could diagnose me and treat me. I wasn't the first to have a mental illness, nor am I the last. Birch Tree and Stride House needs to be here for other people also. A person with a mental illness is still a person, and if guided and treated like me, they can also live not on the outskirts of society, but in it. My life is so much better than I could ever ask for when I was at my sickest. I love myself now. I have a wonderful part-time, a wonderful significant other, and a Habitat house, and a part-time job at Birch Tree. Great friends and family. I have come so far, but it was all worth it. And to have this beautiful life, I am truly a happy and cheerful person. Every day I tell myself self-affirmations such as, I am strong, I am intelligent, I am an artist. I am beautiful, I am cheerful, I am lovely, I am happy, I am friendly, I am a leader and an advocate, I am worthy, and I am a precious gem and a child of the Most High God. I am proof that treatment like Birch Tree and Stride House provide are necessary entities that really do work.
Well, you know, Leslie, we've known each other for a long time. We've had the good fortune of sharing a lot of wonderful times together, but I also know that there are times that you struggle as well, right? I mean, so,
yes.
You know, when we were kind of talking about getting together and I said, well, what is it that you want to say? What having a platform to share your story and a voice. And one thing that you had brought up, you said, you know, Luke, I often think back about the times that I almost took my life with suicide, and all the wonderful things that have happened to me in my life, I would have missed out on. But can you share with us? And you said that you were comfortable sharing these things, and I want you to share just the things that you feel comfortable with. But do you mind telling us a little bit about how kind of you would get to a point that you would feel like taking your own life was a solution, and what happened to get you past that point and to bring you where you are today?
That's a hard question, Luke. I'm not sure exactly what prompted this suicidal thing. I started out talking about the negatives rolling around in my head. It was first, I'm fat, ugly, and I hate myself. And it was fat, ugly, hate myself, and I want to die. I thought I wasn't worth anything. I thought I was just a burden on everyone else. And the doctors told my mom that I would never have a good life and that I'd be always in a group home and never do anything, really. They took the suicide and the mental illness took everything. And my mama stayed with me, but I just got to the point where, why am I here? Why be here? I just want to die. This is absolutely a miserable place in my life. Nothing's getting better. Nothing's being achieved with me being here. I'm just a burden on all my friends and family, and no one's really going to miss me. How can I even do anything? I mean, my life is just going to suck forever. It's just going to be bad forever.
But there was something, you made a choice, right? I mean, something had to have happened to get you maybe beyond that. I'm sorry, go ahead. Keep going.
With the suicide attempt, I contemplated suicide just constantly, you know, and I had all different ways to do it. But what I did was I took 134 pills, some of them lithium, some of them Ambien, some of them triazodone, and lots of really high-power medications. And I waited for about an hour or so before I told anybody, and I did decide to tell because I thought about my mama and how it would destroy her. And then I said, I just couldn't do that to my mom. She was a big reason why I didn't kill myself. And the ambulance was called, and I got my stomach pumped. And I had to get away from a bad relationship that was bringing me down. And I moved from Malvern to Bentontown. You know, we talked about Bentontown.
Mm-hmm.
And the people there just really, they helped me. And not just the therapists and doctors. I'm talking about the transportation, the cooks, the rads, the case managers, other members. You know, that we worked together. And I got one of the main things that helped me was getting on the right medication and staying on that medication.
That kind of helped you build a foundation, I guess, right? I mean, you know, you've talked so much about how, you know, your mother is obviously a very important piece of your life. And it really wasn't until not just having a psychiatrist there with you, but you talked about the janitorial staff and your peers, other people that are living with some of the same symptoms that you were living with at the time, and the staff, that it took an entire community
as yeah.
a support network, right? In order to
yes.
help
yes.
help you find a new path. What is the importance of having those type of people around you?
Support system. Oh,
yeah.
Support system is absolutely vital. You know, you learn that you're not alone. You learn there's other people out there that are going through what you've been through or have gone through what you've been through. And you can connect with these people and open your heart and open your mind and just share with people. And we become so close, like family members, and we really do help each other and we make each other better. You know, going to those group therapies, talking to other people, that helps you to socialize for another thing. And it's something that I look forward to because I talk about all my issues, my problems, and sometimes somebody might say something and it just clicks with me and just helps me out. And then, you know, you become very close to the other members and the staff too. And to have an effective program, you have to have people there that want to be there, people that have a heart for people with mental illness. If you are in it for any other reason than to help other people, you don't need to be there. I would like to tell some people to just be nice. That would be one of my main advice is just to be nice. Another thing is keep your work at work, keep your home at home. And it's just, sometimes you have to go through things and then you come out on the other side. Sometimes you have to be tested to have a testimony.
Hmm. Wow. Yeah, I think most people that know you or meet you would have a very, very difficult time imagining some of the things that you've gone through in your life. You have a degree in early childhood development. You've worked with kids before. You have, family members that you're very close to. You have,
mm-hmm.
you've written children's books. I mean, you've done so many wonderful creative things. I think it's difficult for people to realize just meeting you or seeing you that you have had some very difficult moments. And we've talked about trauma, right? We've talked about
how... Yes.
how difficult it is sometimes to live with trauma. How has that affected you in your life? How has trauma affected you?
Trauma has affected me in every aspect of my life. I've been traumatized just going to the hospitals. Mm-hmm. I've also been raped quite a few times, different people. And I've had people threaten to kill me if I didn't do what they said. What I did was I survived. But I went through so much hell, Luke. So much hell. And the thing that helped me get over the trauma, I'm not all the way over the trauma, but I deal with it, you know, and it doesn't control my life. It doesn't rule my life anymore.
Yeah, I
talked it out, basically, in group therapy and regular individual therapy, and it really helped me. And I met other people that have been through similar traumas. And as far as the traumas at the hospitals, a long time ago, they would do 4-point restraint.
Yeah.
And I've been put in those before. And my wrist is a little bigger than my hand, and I was able to slip out of the leather straps, and I would undo myself and sit on the side of the bed, and then they'd come back in there and say, "You have to lay down for 5 minutes or you can't come out of here." Well, I couldn't control myself. I couldn't just lay there. So I would just keep getting up, and they would keep putting me back down. And this went on for over a whole shift. Different staff. Yeah, different staff came in, and they didn't have a bathroom in there. They didn't have drink in there. I was absolutely dying of thirst. You know, that was traumatic. And I've had other things that happened during the hospitalizations, but now hospitals are a lot better.
Yeah.
They're a lot better. The last time I was hospitalized was at Malvern Psych, and they were great.
Yeah.
So I really believe in trauma-informed care.
Maybe tell a little bit about what do you consider trauma-informed care? How would you define trauma-informed care?
Just letting people know what somebody has been through. Just letting people know that there's something going on, you know, and things happen. And even when somebody's at their sickest and you think you're not making a difference, you think you're not bothering them because, oh, they're so crazy, they'll never remember this. And that's not true. People remember things that happened to them. People remember when people were mean to them. And that's the main thing with the trauma-informed care. The staff needs to be more open to realizing that these people have been through hell and back. Mm-hmm. And they need to be respected and loved and treated with kindness and dignity. Everybody needs to be able to be treated with kindness and dignity.
That's not too much to ask.
It's really not. If just a regular person off the street had to go through even just a little bit of what I've been through, I mean, they would be shocked.
There are probably a lot. There are people out there that may have had similar experiences to you, that they're listening to your story and say, "Oh my goodness, that resonates with me. I understand what she's saying, or I've experienced some of the same things." I mean, do you have any advice or anything to say to maybe people who have not reached out and not sought professional help, or is there anything you want to say to people that may be experiencing trauma or symptoms, but yet that they're not asking for help?
Okay, well, I've been in those shoes before where you didn't want anyone to know. But there's no reason to be ashamed anymore. There's no reason to be embarrassed. This is something that happens to so many people. And the longer you keep it a secret, the more it festers in your soul. Mm. And you got to be able to try to let things go, but let people know what's going on with you. Don't just suffer in silence. There is help out there. There is hope out there. And as long as you have hope, you have everything. Never give up the hope. And if you are still breathing, then your story is not over. You are a person. You are wonderful, and you are special, and you're unique, and you are wanted. Suicide and different things like that can really take a toll on somebody. And just know that there are people out there that want to help you. There are good people out there that do want to help you, and you can find help and you can find hope. Just don't give up. Life is worth the living. It may feel like it's absolutely miserable right now, but you just wait. It's going to get better. And you just got to keep doing things that you enjoy doing, too. That's another thing. Finding things that you enjoy doing. Finding things that makes you happy. That brings you comfort. And just know that you are not alone. And that's my main thing.
Well, you know, you said something. If you're still breathing, then your story is not over, right? That this is
right.
We've focused on some difficult times in your life, and even though through those things that you were talking about, you kept coming back to there is hope, and there are good people, and there are things that can happen in your life that can change for the better. Just kind of as we wrap up, you have committed yourself over the last at least 5 or 6 years to tell your story to others. Maybe personally for you and maybe for other people, why is it important that you share your story or others share their story?
Oh, it's really important to find people that will tell their story, because once you open up about yourself, it allows other people to say, hey, this person opened up and told what was going on with them, and it made me feel better. And maybe I can make it. Maybe I am not alone. Maybe there are other people out there that I can talk to and meet with and form relationships with and bonds with and get a support system going. Mm. And I think that's important, you know. And I just want to say that instead of just surviving with a mental illness, I am thriving with a mental illness.
You are thriving. You have got a wonderful partner. You have a wonderful family. You have a wonderful support network. But the thing about you, Leslie, that I've always admired about you is your willingness and your ability to give of yourself to other people. You share that through your creativity. You share that through your own story. You share that through giving hope to others who at that time may not even believe that hope exists. And the immeasurable things that you've done to help other people over the years, I don't think you even fully understand the difference you've made in others' lives. You've made a difference in my life. And I just want to say how much I admire you and how much I appreciate you being what I think is obviously a peer advocate and a peer leader. And I hope that you continue to share your story as you go forward to inspire others.
This is not the end, Luke. This is only the beginning. I'm just getting started.
That's right. And I hate to be so somber because you and I are usually very upbeat when we talk, and we talk about so many cool things. But I'm happy that, you know, look, there are some deeper, darker sides sometimes that people don't want to talk about, and that others who are listening and saying, you know, I'm not alone. It's important. It's important that they hear that, number one. But number two, that, like you said, it's not over. You're not alone, and it's not over. And to continue to move forward. But again, thank you, Leslie, for being with us today. I would love to talk to you again at some point, because I know that you have so many life lessons that you could teach all of us. And I just want to thank you for sharing your time and story with us today.
Well, thank you so much, Luke. And I look forward to having another conversation with you.
Of course.
And I just want to say thank you for all the things you did for me as well. You helped me publish my 3 children's books. I did a newsletter for a year, and you helped me do that. You were just always an inspiration to me, and you were always just so positive and optimistic and charismatic and just a wonderful person to be around. You walk in the room, and the room lights up, Luke.
That's so sweet of you. It means a lot, mostly coming from you, Leslie, because I consider you a mentor, and I appreciate everything that you've taught me.
Oh, wow. Thank you. I consider you a mentor, too.
Well, we'll continue this love fest after the call, but I again, I want to thank you, and also want to thank those that have joined in today to listen to Leslie and her story, and also for all the people that are supporting the work of the Star Coalition, because we do want to bring together great minds like Leslie and others as we work together to shape the future of mental health. And so be sure to follow us if you want to learn more about the Star Coalition at www.thestar.org, thestarr.org. And I appreciate you guys for joining us, and we'll see you soon.